This week on The Vergecast, we're doing two episodes. On this episode, Tom Warren joins us to talk about the next generation of consoles. That's PS5, Xbox Series X, Xbox Series S, reviews of all of them. Then there's an Apple event next week, new Macs with ARM processors. Got to talk about that. That's coming up now on The Vergecast.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at Deloitte.com/US/engineering advantage.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello and welcome to The Vergecast, the flagship podcast of the next generation. It's good. It's like a hopeful...
It's just a Star Trek podcast. We're just going to talk about Jean-Luc Picard for the next 2 hours.
You know, in many ways, I think we are. I'm your friend, Eli. That is Dieter Bone. Hi, Dieter.
Hey, how's it going?
Tom Warren is here.
Hello there. How are you?
We're doing all right, Tom. So we brought in a Brit on this, the 45th day of the American election. Here's what we're going to do. The election is not over as we record this. We're recording this on Thursday night. There is a lot of just dead ahead tech news to talk about. We had Xbox reviews. Tom did an Xbox review. We have PS5 news coming. Tom has written an explainer of how the controller works, which is apparently amazing. There's an Apple event next week. We're expecting ARM Macs. A lot of dead ahead gadget tech news to talk about. And then there is a lot of election news, particularly platform policy election news. I was talking to Dieter earlier. We could not figure out how to manage the transition between those two things in one episode. We just couldn't. I was like, there's no segue available here.
Yeah. What's the audio equivalent of just like a line break, just like an HR bar, you know, that's on the website? You're just like, oh, we'll just put a break. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Right. Boop. We just couldn't. I mean, I think we've done a reasonably successful job of keeping it all together, but this week is just too much. So we're going to do something, a little bit of an experiment. We're going to have two smaller sized episodes. We'll go over regardless. I'm not going to tell you how long we think they're going to be because we're going to go over, but we're going to do this episode, Xbox, PS5, Apple event. There's some other stuff to talk about. That's this one. We're going to do another episode with Addy, both going to be in the feed at the same time. With Addy, we're obviously going to talk about the election, platform policy, what Twitter, Facebook, YouTube have been doing around the massive amount of disinformation and chaos that has come about in this election process. So both episodes are in the feed. If you want to hear the policy talk, go check out our conversation with Addy. If you come for the gadgets, here we are. We're going to talk about gadgets. The other thing I'm not doing is I'm not going to update the COVID website count this week. It's 34 weeks, but hopefully we're done talking about it. So we'll get back to the pandemic is still the biggest story in the world. I just think this week it has in some ways been eclipsed by what will happen with the future of American politics. So 34 weeks, we'll come back. We'll check in on COVID. We'll do all that stuff next week. This is the Xbox, PS5, Apple episode. If you want to go talk about election policy, platform stuff, go check out the Addy episode. Clear? Clear. Okay. Tom Warren.
Hello.
There's like three new consoles, right? The Series X, the Series S, the PS5. You reviewed the Series X and the Series S this week. How'd it go?
Yeah, it was. I went to bed at 4 a.m. and got up at 7 a.m. today, so that's how it went. it's been a ride.
Yeah, can we just really quickly? Our listeners are savvy, and so they know that the job of reviewing a console isn't actually fun. It is work. Like, you're playing games, but you're playing games with an eye towards judging things, and that's a completely different experience than just playing a video game.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be fun. I was like, yeah, I'll do two Xbox reviews. It's going to be fun. And then I was like, no, it's not. Never again. I'll wait 10 years until I do this again. So we took a look at the Series X and the Series S, and they're basically very similar sort of consoles, except they're very different. So one's $499, the other one's $299. And like the $499 is the real, like, you know, PS5 competitor, and the $299 console is the sort of like, it's the budget one, I guess.
Yeah.
It's the sort of snackable Xbox, the little tiny Xbox. And yeah, I feel like both of them, even though they're very different, they kind of do very similar things. And I feel like they're very similar to like a PC. So like in different generations before, or like the whole idea of like a next gen console is that it brings something new and it like pushes the, you know, different games forward and tech forward. I'm not seeing that yet with any of these consoles, to be honest. Maybe the PS5's controller. But I feel like we're at a point where games, it's in the past, you've had like these big jumps, right? In generations. And I don't think that jump is necessarily here yet. So the Xbox represents that in the best way possible, because it just feels like you've upgraded your PC.
The claims from both of these companies is the ray tracing for graphics is like the big graphical jump.
Yeah.
Higher frame rate at 4K and, mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess load times, right? Like for the Xbox specifically and the Series X specifically, that is supposed to be this generation's equivalent of, I don't know, the N64 jumping to 3D or, you know, whatever, you know, the big jump is for each console generation. But it seems like you can't just point to one of those things and be like, yep, this is better in that way for sure. It's just everything is a little bit nicer and faster in lots of different ways that, it, like your review said, felt like the equivalent of upgrading your PC.
Yeah, and like I know every generation new console comes out, it always takes a little while for the games to catch up anyway.
Right.
But I think with the Xbox this time, instead of like they haven't got these new games, like that's one of the key missing parts. Like to me, so if I was unboxing an Xbox next Tuesday, when they all come out, I think I would be super excited about the load times, super excited that, you know, everything runs a bit faster and stuff. But I think I would be missing that, like, that super excitement about something new.
Right.
There's always something exciting about something brand new, whether it's like a new iPhone that has like magnets on the back and you're like, ooh, you know?
No, I will say this. I've had the past two new iPhones I've purchased. I've been like, oh, it's still just iOS.
Yeah. You had that moment where you're like, oh, and then like 5 minutes after you're done playing with it, you're like, oh, wait, this feels the same. Nothing's changed.
This is iOS. And it feels like the because they didn't change the dashboard, it's very much the same for the Series X, right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I think the basically using the console is exactly the same. Like there's no differences. It's a little bit faster, obviously, in the dashboard and stuff you'd expect. It's just where the games get optimized and updated. That's where it can be like, you know, transformative for certain games because they're running at like an old sluggish 30 frames per second, which does feel like, if you're used to, like someone like me, I'm used to playing at like 200 frames on a gaming PC and like it's, you know, super fast. And if I go back to 30 frames a second, I sometimes actually feel physically sick. Like that's not even an exaggeration. Like it depends on the game, but like genuinely sometimes it does throw you a little bit. And I think a bunch of people are used to 30 frames per second, but once they feel 60 frames a second and beyond, it's like going from like gigabit internet and going back to 56K modem, right? Like the step back is like so dramatic that you would want to keep at 60 frames forward.
You know, one of the points in your review that I think is super interesting with regards to the Xbox anyway, is that your ability to choose what you prioritize in the visual presentation of the game is approaching like the PC zone. So you're saying you would prioritize high frame rates. My instinct is like, just, I'm bad at video games. It's not like my reaction times matter. Like I'm crashing the car anyway. You know, it's like, be honest, make it as beautiful as possible, right? Like I would prefer to have more details, better lights and like, I'm just looking around in most games and then quickly dying.
But that's the thing, like for you, that's there. And for me, who wants higher frame rates, that's there. So like, we're getting to this point where you do have these modes, and obviously on the PC you just have like sliders, right? You just crank all the settings up or crank them down. So much granular detail. You obviously don't need so much of that on the console, but it's so simplified. It's just a flick of a switch, right? And it's just nice to have that. And I feel like if we can get even more modes in there, I feel like that's great. Choice is great, right?
So yeah, but it does show the limits of computing power right now, right? Like what we can make with a game has run ahead of what a reasonably priced consumer piece of hardware can do. What you would want in the new generation of a new console is to just everything's set to max, all sliders at max all the time, right? That's what you would expect from like the good one. But that's just not possible.
Has that ever happened though?
No, because like, so the hardware that's put inside these things, like you're like, I have a $3,000 gaming PC, right? I can run Watch Dogs at max frames, max everything, max ray tracing. You just can't achieve that on a $500 sort of miniature PC, essentially. Everything's shrunk down and smaller.
But isn't the story usually that it's at the end of the console life cycle that you get the most performance squeezed out of it?
Yeah.
So I think here what's particularly interesting is, you know, Tom's frame of this is more like a PC upgrade than your standard generational leap, is that the games are being updated, but that big optimization push that takes years isn't quite pulling all of the performance out of it, which that's just a little bit of a change in, I think, the curve of what we expect. To me, the one that always comes to mind is the launch of the 360, which is ages ago. Mm-hmm. Children, the Xbox 360 was a video game console. It wasn't a circle. It should have been a circle. Anyway, that was the one that we moved to 16:9 aspect ratios. We moved to HD. Like, this was a big change.
Yeah.
It wasn't just we're pushing more pixels. It was we are re-architecting how game consoles work. It's online all the time. And it just took a few years before everyone really understood what to do with it.
So for me, for this generation, the big open question is, will we see that pattern repeat? Or are these things in their core architecture, their processors, their GPUs, and the way that they access storage so much closer to the way that a traditional gaming PC works that those optimizations like will come faster? Like the reason that games got so good towards the end of these other life cycles is there's like particular things that you can do to squeeze out extra performance out of the, you know, specialized components that are inside a console. The components inside the Xbox Series X, like they're so much closer to what you've got in a PC in terms of like coding, I think, that we may not see like that spike at the end of the console's generation.
Yeah, I feel like the problem with this generation is ray tracing, right? So that thing's pretty heavy. Like, there's always something that they promise with these consoles, right? Like, so for the Xbox One originally and the PS4, it was 1080p. That was the target, right? And it never quite hit there at the beginning, and it took a while to get there. And then it roughly got there. I mean, pretty much the PS4 did anyway. And then the Xbox One X came along, and it was like, we're doing 4K, and it didn't quite get there. Like. And then it did, and it took a while. And I think this time it's like, we're doing ray tracing. And like at the moment on PC, that like, if I whack all the ray tracing settings on and stuff in some games, I don't even get 30 frames with like, you know, an expensive graphics card. So I think the reality of ray tracing is going to be pretty limited. And that's going to be like the point where we push up against, and the optimizations will have to be found there. They are doing, like, on the PC side, they do something that's called like super sampling. So it uses NVIDIA's using like an AI system to like scan the game and then upscale from a lower resolution image to a higher one. So it'd be super interesting to see if that comes to these consoles, because that will sort of like help with the hit from ray tracing. Mm-hmm. But there's always something they need to bump up against, and something that we'll only really see really highly ray traced games like in a couple of years, right? I think realistically.
So can we talk about the games library? So, you know, everyone knows that there aren't like launch titles for this Xbox. Like the big one at launch day, like, oh yeah, I'm going to get this game. It's going to look and feel amazing. And it's the reason to go buy this console. But there's like a bunch of games that are being optimized, not all of them. And it has repercussions for, I don't know how you store them and like where they go. So what is the, and then of course, the other big thing is there's Xbox Game Pass Ultimate something something. And so where do you see the state of like the games that are available to play for either of these consoles? Because to me, I am really we're going to try and do, you know, one versus PlayStation later, but I'll just tell you that right now I'm really torn between the desire to have this simple, ecosystem of Netflix for games that Microsoft offers, and what to me seems like clearly superior hardware and exclusive games on the PS5. Like I'm genuine. I don't know which one I'm going to get. I might end up getting them both.
Yeah. And I guess that sort of decision, I think, is a lot of people. And I think that's why the Series S exists, right? Like the cheaper consoles, it's like, oh, this is our basically our Xbox Game Pass console, just at a lower resolution. But yeah, in terms of like exclusives, they obviously they have some exclusives at launch, but they're like, you know, indie games, and there's not the AAA Halo, you know,
right.
It was supposed to be Halo Infinite and that got delayed because it didn't look that great when they showed it.
They got to fix that one model for that one brute or whatever it was. Yeah.
But yeah, like it's missing that. It's definitely missing those games. And let's be honest, the Xbox One throughout its generation was missing games. Obviously, Microsoft's done Xbox Game Pass, which has like helped sort of offset that. They've made a lot of promises. They've acquired Bethesda. They're, you know, acquiring sort of game studios all the time, to be honest.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of promise there. There's the promise that these games will eventually come. They're just not here at the moment. So I think they're relying on, like, you know, Assassin's Creed, Valhalla, Watch Dogs, Cyberpunk, those sort of things to be the draw for this particular console. But those are obviously available on the PS5. So
right.
it's really Game Pass and those sort of around launch games, should we say. Not all of them are at launch.
Yeah, I feel like if you're relying on Assassin's Creed, you're like, you're betting against exclusivity. Like you can play Assassin's Creed on a number of Samsung refrigerators at this point. Like, as you have, obviously you reviewed the console, but Game Pass seems like a markedly different way to think about owning, acquiring, playing video games. Did you feel that right away, or was it just like, well, I'm paying for another subscription service now?
Yeah, I think like, so Game Pass is incredible value at the moment, right? Like you pay $10 a month and you get more than 100 games. You can stream them and you can play them actually on consoles as well. So it's more like the streaming side of it is like an add-on. But it is shaping out to be sort of like a Netflix for games. But it does come with the fact that it's all digital. You don't own these games. They can disappear. If publishers just decide, you know, we don't want that game on there anymore, it's gone. If Microsoft decides to put the prices up, we see that frequently with Netflix, the price will go up. So I think we are heading to an era in gaming which is a little uncomfortable, perhaps, because if the same thing happens with like the Netflix side of things, and we get a bunch of different streaming services, and you have to have a subscription for the games you want to play, then you end up paying quite a lot of money when you could have just bought those games, right, individually. So I feel like we're at a sort of tipping point to see how Microsoft does with this, because they're the ones that are really kind of leading the way in the gaming side, to be honest. Stadia is obviously doing their own thing, and a bunch of other cloud streaming services, Amazon as well. But none of them have the breadth and the content that Microsoft does at the moment. So, but if Sony starts spinning up, if Nintendo starts spinning up, it's going to be interesting times. But I feel like Xbox Game Pass is great value for now. And I think it will be, you know, in the future. It's just, I do worry about the ownership side and, you know, the pricing and everything like that, getting locked into that sort of subscription.
You know how a bunch of websites, we used to do this too. They'll put what's coming to Netflix and what's leaving Netflix in like the next 30 days. They're like, oh, this is leaving Netflix. I got to go watch everything now. The idea that you're going to need to keep an eye on what's going to leave Xbox Game Pass, and you're going to have to like, oh my God, this game is going to disappear in a week. I need to try and finish it right now and crank 40 hours into a game or something. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. I think at the moment, like Game Pass is so, is really good if you don't really know what you want to play, or you just want to discover some games. There's so much on there. It's great for that. Especially if you're new to an Xbox, right? Like it's a great starting point to like, and they've got all the EA games coming into it and stuff. It's like, there's a lot, but yeah, I just don't know where it's heading. So
the other thing that's really interesting to me is how much you seem to love the Xbox Series S. Like, is it just because it's so small and cute? Like I just like, I don't know, this is a Vergecast thing. Most people are like, oh, I want to get the good one, but there's something that's appealing about the Series S is just like, I'll get it as my Game Pass machine.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much what it is. Like to me, I keep describing it as a 1080p machine. So like, there's a lot of people who still play in 1080p TVs, whether it's in their living room or in their bedrooms. a lot of kids still play on 1080p TVs and monitors. And it feels like it's designed for those sort of people. They don't care about 4K. They're perfectly fine with 1080p. They haven't experienced perhaps 4K and the benefits of it, and they don't really care about it. And yeah, it does feel like the perfect Game Pass machine, and it's just so small. And I think I come into my living room and I see like the PS5, and I'm like, holy, like, this thing is so big. And I see the Xbox on the side, and I'm like, someone knocked over my Xbox. Like, these things are just like strangely designed this time around. And I feel like the S is just like, it's not the greatest design, but like I way prefer that design, and it slots in anywhere. Like it's the smallest Xbox they've ever done. So I think that just appeals to my inner gadget person. And it does everything the Xbox Series X does pretty much, just at a lower resolution. That's probably the easiest way to describe it.
Well, a lower resolution, but also you're going to need to juggle storage way more often with it.
Yeah, that's the worst part about it. That's the kind of, I feel like, so it's 512 gig SSD.
Okay.
It's actually usable is 364. So that's the only thing that actually matters.
And there's definitely 100 gig games. Like how big is Call of Duty?
Call of Duty is like 105, I think.
Yeah.
Destiny is like 108, although it's gonna get smaller. Mm-hmm. So like if you install one of those, you got like another 4 or 5 games, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe even less than that. And then you're full, which is like, ouch.
And the storage expansion is super expensive.
Yeah, it's like $220. So that puts the price up to nearly $520 if you go for that. And that's more than the Series X. And all right, yeah, you are getting half a gig extra storage, but that's not the point. Yeah, the storage situation is a problem. I feel like Microsoft could have brought out different sizes of those storage cards, and that would have helped. But ultimately, they're probably going to introduce a 1 terabyte Series S at some point in the future, surely. So, which will address that, but it doesn't help right now. So, that's the big drawback I see at the moment.
So, one thing I want to ask about, we're going to talk about the PS5 and its insane hardware in a minute. But, I've talked to you about it. I talked to Andrew about it. The controller of the PS5 is the thing, right? I mean, the haptics and controller seem like it's standout. Wow, this is a new experience. Is there anything like that with the Xboxes?
No. Like, not like the
Dieter's
controller.
Dieter's shaking. I just see Dieter shaking.
There's
his
one
head.
Thing I think that is actually that the Xbox has that the PS5 lacks.
Oh, quick resume?
Quick resume, yeah.
Yeah, but like the PS5 has like similar like techniques like to get there. It's not quite the same, but yeah. Quick resume like basically lets you cycle between sort of, I say 5 or 6 because that's the rough good estimate. It could be more, it could be less. But 5 or 6 games, they load in like, sometimes they load in like a few seconds, but usually within 10 seconds. So super good if you're playing, like my best example is if you're playing in the middle of playing like Ori, like a single player game, and then your friend invites you to play Fortnite or something, and you're like, oh no, I need to like finish this and get to a save point. You don't, you just hit the invite and go into the other game. Like you start to forget about save points. So it's pretty good for that. That is the Xbox's killer feature for sure.
But I mean, that's the Xbox's killer feature, but it's
but it's software, right?
So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the PS5, the controller, like it's genuinely, I don't want to say game changing, but it is. So I just said it.
I mean, in the one narrow sense, it is.
It's so literally game-changing.
Well, actually, let's take a break and come back and talk about the PS5. Viren and Andrew actually reviewed that console. That review's out. You wrote a description of how the controller works. There's just a lot to talk about. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. Here's the story of innovation told in 5 words. Try. Explore. Connect. Pivot. Transform. See what happened there? As soon as Connect entered the story, innovation became achievable. That's why Deloitte works with clients and tech alliances to bring together the people, ideas, and technologies to overcome, solve, and of course, transform. Connect to what matters for innovation. Start at Deloitte.com/US/innovate.
Okay, we're back. PS5.
PS5. It's big.
It looks so ridiculous. It is amazing to me how the design of this console is so wacky that I'm like, I should buy an Xbox. Is that?
Yeah.
That's weird, right? Like, that's not how you're supposed to think about consoles.
Yeah, like, as as someone who like values what their living room looks like and is very, very intricate about it, like the PS5 is just a big no-no to me. Like, yeah. I can't put it in anywhere where it doesn't really like just jut out and scream like, hey, I'm here.
Well, I mean, literally last week, Ashley on the show was like, if I walked into my boyfriend's living room and saw a PS5, I'd be like, get that out of here.
Yeah.
That's an indictment of this thing. But ideally, you know, this is your big moment. You're going to buy a new TV, maybe a new soundbar. You're going to tuck all the stuff away in a closet. This is my plan. You're going to do like an AV rack closet.
I live in an apartment, Eli.
I'm just saying, get a better house.
Am I going to run a 50-foot HDMI 2.1 cable? Like, that's going to cost $3,000.
Look, Dieter, we all make sacrifices. This is the time. This is the first console that really justifies home renovation because you don't want it out in public.
But if you live in a mansion like that, you can have a PS5 in every room, right?
Yeah, exactly. So design. Well, actually, let's talk about it. You've got it there. You were saying earlier, like, it looks imposing. Talk about the actual design of the thing and how using it just plays out. Is it? Do you just get used to it? Is it?
Yeah, like I don't feel like I've really got used to the design, to be honest. I think just because I've slotted it into my TV stand and it looks kind of goofy on its side. I try to stand it up and I'm like, I just have to put it on the floor because it just doesn't really fit in with my living room right now. So I haven't really gotten used to it. But I will say, like, they're just boxes that you shove under your TV ultimately. Like, you're going to have to figure out a better way to shove them under it. But ultimately, once it's under there and it's out of the way and it's a few months down the line, it's like stuff like the controller and all the new sort of games and the content selection that really matters, right? And it is that controller is like, yeah. Like, that's the thing.
Before we talk about good hardware, one of the things that Andrew pointed out and Veer noticed too, and he actually showed it to me, the stand for the console. Theoretically, this is only a problem once, but it's actually really weird and complicated and strange. And it's got like, you do a twist thing and then there's a hidden chamber where the screw goes. And it's like,
it literally took me like 10 minutes to work out. Like, this is the most confusing thing I think I've ever unboxed in like probably like 10 years where like, I never usually unbox like a phone or a laptop and don't know how to do something on it and have to go into the manual. Right. There's usually like a sticker or something that just guides you. There's like nothing. And I didn't realize that you had to twist it.
Right.
And it took me a while to figure out. But once you twist it, there's like a little screw inside. You take it out of its little compartment. You free it.
There's a secret compartment for a screw. I mean, come on.
I think, was it Submit at Polygon who thought that was so clever? He wrote an entire post about it. it's like, yeah, it's been a long time since there's been a new console generation. We need to write about one screw.
Like, you like pull the screw out and like, you get a PlayStation trophy on your screen. No, you don't. But like, the stand is pointless. I'm just going to say that. Like, I have it, where is it? It's on the floor right now, but I have it on the floor without the stand. It stands fine without the stand.
Yeah.
I don't understand why there's a stand. But on its side, you kind of need it because it does a little bit of a weird wobbly balancing act otherwise.
It's funny. I bet there's going to be like cases for the PS5.
Oh, there's already third party wings that you can get. Then Sony had to like tamp it down because they were using the wrong branding or whatever. Oh, so there's going to be a whole lot of shady plastic things that you can replace the wings with.
Yeah. If you are a TikTok hustler with a 3D printer out there, there is a market for you right now to square off the PS5. Think about it. Okay, so we can dunk on the design. We've been dunking on the design for months, quite honestly. But you've got it. I mean, you've used it. Tell me more about this controller. Because that it's the one that we've made, we've written about it. We've shown pictures. Everyone who's come into contact with it has said it's amazing. It feels like one of those things where people are going to have to go and experience it to really get it. But it just seems like a step change, a game changer, if you will, for how we think about video game controllers.
Yeah, like it's very different. Obviously, a lot of controllers have had haptics and rumble features over the years. You can go all the way back to like N64 days if you want. But like, it's not that, right? The best way, like, so there's a packing game that comes built into the console. So it's called Astro's Playroom. And I think it's the one thing that everyone, if you buy a PS5, you just play that game before you do anything else, because it's like such a good demonstration of the controller. And like, you, the first thing you do is you're sat on like a tiny little fan, and then you slide down and collect coins along the way. And as you come off that fan, everything about where you're walking feels different. Like, it almost feels like you can feel the material beneath your feet changing. And you slide down, and it feels like there's a hard slide beneath the palms of your hands. And then you get onto the sand, it's like a pitter-patter underneath your feet, and you get onto like the wood, and it all feels very different. And it really, like, you start to feel it, and you know, it's like one of those delighters. You're like, oh, this is nice, this is cool. And you think, oh, this is cool. And then you pull like a rope, and the actual tension on the triggers adjusts. So it's like it's fighting with you. The actual controller is physically fighting with you to make you feel like you're pulling that rope and opening that door. And it's that's like the very different part. I think it's more the triggers. The haptics are amazing. I think they're better than Nintendo Switch haptics. They're as good or better than the iPhone haptics. It's that subtlety that you get, you know, like mm-hmm. on an iPhone, you hold down the flashlight and you get that like slight haptic feedback. It's like that, but just imagine feeling that across your palms and feeling like in Spider-Man, like a rhino comes and just stomps, and it like stumps across your hands. So it feels like you're getting the weight of him. Mm. It's really, yeah, it's hard to like describe without feeling it, really, is one of those things. But the real turning point for me with the controller is when in Astro's, like a couple of minutes in, you turn into like a spring-loaded gadget toy thing, and you literally feel the tension of you have to pull on the tension of the triggers to really get the spring to like release, and you just feel them releasing. It's just, I don't know, everything about it just... The feedback was just great. Like, it really felt like you were controlling that spring. It's just crazy.
The big question for me, especially with the tension on the triggers, one, I really hope game designers think through these things and don't just like turn everything up to max just because it's there.
Yeah.
But two, I hope game designers actually code to it, right? Like, PS5 is going to get some exclusives, but there's going to have a bunch of cross-platform games.
Yeah, and I think that's the question over at the moment, is like, how much will this be used? And like, in Spider-Man, it doesn't feel as prevalent.
Right.
It's like Astro's is definitely a showcase. It's, you know, showing off the new controller. But then I think Fortnite, they're adding in like some SMG effects. So you be able to feel the guns will feel different when you shoot. And another game, and I can't remember what it's called, but like the trigger will lock up when your gun locks up, which is crazy. which is like a crazy different sort of element that we haven't had before.
Yeah.
And then like in NBA, you'll be like running along and your character will get tired. So then it becomes increased, you know, the resistance is there. So you have to really push down to like get him to like start moving again.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I always blame the controller when I lose, and now it'll be real. It'll be true.
But that to me seems, you know, our conversation around the Xboxes was lots of graphical improvements, a new game distribution system. Are you going to buy the Series S for your bedroom TV that's 1080p? This conversation is, there's a meaningfully different way to experience video games because of the controller. And that, regardless of how ridiculous the box looks, that to me, that's like the deciding factor. If you're thinking PS5 versus Xbox, and you know Sony's going to come with a game library because that's mm-hmm. how Sony does it, and Microsoft made all these acquisitions, they got to spin it up. Like, why wouldn't...
Because it looks so dumb in my living room and I'll get in trouble.
But that's like all we got. That's the knock. It's like Sony was like, oh, it's too good. Make it look like Cybertron.
That's the thing. Like, the best console would be, I think, the one that had like the design of the Xbox. I mean, the design of the Xbox isn't great, but like the design of the Series S with the controller of the PS5. And like a mixture of like Game Pass and Sony's exclusives, that would be like the dream console, right? It's the same as like if you mixed Android and iOS together. Like,
yeah.
There isn't a perfect one, but there's, I think like the Xbox does also feel different in games, but for different reasons. Like games feel different because they're running smoothly. They don't feel different in your hand. And then the PS5 is obviously going to make games run like as smoothly as well. But that controller is definitely like the key thing to the PS5 to me.
So the PS5 doesn't have the quick resume feature that lets you bounce between four different games, but the load time is still really good. And they have this, they redesigned their home screen. So it's got the same tiles at the top, but at least they put media off in the corner in a different tab. But then when you hover over an icon, there's all these options to like jump to a different part of the game or like experience, like do this thing here. So there's like a second row of tiles for doing stuff. Did you use that stuff? Was it cool?
I haven't really used that much. But yeah, like you basically can jump into like, say like Fortnite. We can't test Fortnite yet, but like the idea in Fortnite is that you just jump into the mode that you want to load up rather than have to, you know, worry about going through all the menus and selecting everything. So it's like, you know what it reminds me of? Do you remember like the deep linking, like Windows Phone, like from the tile where you'd pin a tile and then it would go deep into the app? That sort of thing. It reminds me of that. And I think that's great because like, it's, as long as all the devs support it and stuff, like that's a really good experience. Cause you just, it's just so much quicker to like, cause half the time you're watching splash screens or like some part of the EULA that you don't care about. You just want to get like into the game. Right. So it's an interesting way of handling it.
So one of the things we should talk about is how these things are going to get to people. Right. I mean, so we're talking about these controllers are, you got to feel them to really understand it in any normal circumstance. I'd be like, go to Best Buy and try it out. But it's obviously there's a pandemic. You shouldn't do that even if you could. And I don't think that you can. So Best Buy has announced that Xbox and PS5s are only going to be sold online for the entire holiday season. Sony is basically telling people not to line up at stores on the release date. It just feels like this thing is going to be very different for people to get the units. We are expecting them to sell out, obviously. How is that part playing out for both of the consoles?
Yeah, so that's kind of a bit of an unknown at the moment because, so I don't think Microsoft's doing quite the same. I feel like they're still going to be in stores, as far as I'm aware. They haven't announced anything different. But I think the demand and like the supply is going to be interesting. I feel like these things are going to be pretty highly in demand, especially over the festive period. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't really see the ability to get them in stores until like early next year, just generally across stores anyway.
Yeah, I mean, online pre-orders were an absolute fiasco for both of these. There's going to be launch day things available at some websites, and the chance, like the people that couldn't get in on pre-orders are going to be even more eager to try and get in this time. The bots are going to go crazy on these websites. They're going to know what times to show up. You know the old Tickle Me Elmo, like people like rushing into the store and there was a frenzy to get one and they're beating each other up and whatever. We're going to have the online equivalent of that for the next 3 months. I've just given up trying. I want one or both of these, and I just know it's going to be such a pain to do it that I've just in my heart accepted that me playing on either one of these consoles is a mid-2021 thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair, to be honest. I think like the Series S will probably be, I feel like Microsoft's going to sort of push a lot of those out into the market. So I feel like that will probably be easier to get.
But who, come on. I mean, the whole Series, I mean, this is your framing and maybe it's not Microsoft's framing, but the Series S is the second one that you buy.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the budget one. Or like the one for your bedroom or your kids, you know, kids to play Fortnite.
Yeah, it's the one. But that's what I mean. It's the, if you have a 4K TV, which many, many people do now, you want to get the most out of it. And so like when the Xbox One X was out and all of the stores were full of Xbox One S's, I was always like, well, I don't want that one. I want the good one. And I feel like that's, we're going to see a lot of Series S stock just like floating around because everyone upgrading to a new console generation is going to want the biggest and baddest one. And then you'll sort of fill your other rooms.
Yeah. Like the early adopters are going to want the latest and the greatest. They don't want, you know, something that's not doing 4K. But yeah, like if, I don't know what availability is going to be like, but it's, the pre-orders are such a mess that you can just tell. Like, and the NVIDIA graphics cards have been even worse of a disaster. Like, there's just none of them. Like, and who knows how many consoles Microsoft and Sony are making? Is Sony making more than Microsoft? We don't know. Like,
we should point out here too that demand for game consoles overall is through the roof. Nintendo had earnings this week. Switch sales are continuing to be so good that they've actually raised their forecast for the Switch. So even in the face of massive next gen console launches, Switch sales are just clipping right along at high rates. So I do think this is going to be something to track. Although just having had this conversation, I'm going to buy a PS5. I'm saying it out loud. I'll buy them both.
We should talk about one last console thing before we break. And that is how exciting it's going to be to try and make sure that the next TV you buy successfully has all the features and lights that you want for your console.
No, so I have promised a 1 hour HDMI deep dive. I've never had a one-off joke on the podcast result in so many people saying, actually, that would be great. Please give us the 1 hour HDMI deep dive. Here's my promise to you. When it's over, when this election chaos is over, which we are hoping is soon, we will provide the soothing relief that brings our nation together of having Tom and Chris Welch. We're just going to go deep into HDMI, into 120 hertz. We're going to see what Tom's running. Chris has been reviewing TVs. We're going to talk about monster cables. It's going to be amazing. Shielded, unshielded, you got big decisions to be made. Cable balance.
Oh, yeah.
I was so disappointed when I plugged the Series X into my 1440p monitor, which is like, it does 165 hertz through DisplayPort, but it only does 60 hertz through HDMI because the manufacturer was like, I'm not putting the HDMI 2 in here because like no one uses it anyway. And it's like, so I can't use the 120 hertz mode at all.
We're going to get the president of HDMI on the phone, whoever that is. Look, it's an industry organization that's powerful enough to put its logo, like its weird logo,
true,
on the back of the Xbox Series X. Not one, but twice. It's like, if you look at it, it's like, what is the one organization that got its logo on there? Not once, but twice. It's HDMI.
HDMI. It's the killer.
Is anybody confused about how the Xbox connects? So I promise, just as a form of self-care for me, we will deliver the 1 hour. It's like a treat that we're going to give ourselves. Let's take another break. We got to come back. There's an Apple event next week. We should probably talk about that a little bit. We'll be right back.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Cult Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual past while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari, W., and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Dieter.
Yeah.
I gotta say, Apple is like, it's just like, this was the one of the deadest weeks of like tech. You know, there's obviously like reviews of things coming out.
Yeah.
And those embargoes were long set. Mm-hmm. But in terms of people like making news, one of the deadest weeks in tech ever.
I thought it was a perfect week for me to relaunch my tech news newsletter. My guys, this has been exactly great.
It just, Apple's like, oh yeah, it's Monday. Nothing's happening tomorrow. here's an event invite for next week.
And the event invite was one more thing. And it's like, if there was ever a time when I didn't need one more thing, it was the day before the election.
And it's on Xbox launch day. The event.
And also on Xbox. It was just a lot. It's like, where does Apple live? Apple lives above geopolitical,
yeah,
like chaos. It lives above other companies. So one more thing event. On the last earnings call, Apple had earnings, a weird quarter as you would expect for them. iPhone pushed into October. iPhone sales flat because there's not a new one. Mac sales way up. But on that earnings, but Apple did fine. They made a lot of money. Just their mix of products a little bit different. But on that call, Tim Cook said, we have some great things coming up for the year. We have been expecting, they announced they would have ARM Max before the end of the year. Here's a big event. One more thing. Yep. Everyone's expecting it. Apple's not tamping down those expectations as they've done in the past with their events. Here we go.
Yeah. So Mark Gurman over at Bloomberg says that currently they're ramping up production on new 13 and 16-inch MacBook Pros and a new 13-inch MacBook Air. And that at this event, what we are expecting to get are going to be the 13-inch MacBook Pro and MacBook Air that are going to look identical to the current versions, but have Apple Silicon inside. That's like, if you were to stay, like, what's the most default prediction you could make? That's just what it's going to be. It's that.
What one interesting thing about Gurman's report, he said the processor would be based on the A14, which it makes sense in many ways. The current developer unit Mac that's running an A series chip, I think, has an A12Z Bionic.
Something like that, yeah.
It's the one in the iPad Pro. So it makes sense they would just jump to the next one. But there have been a lot of conversations about what if you don't have to manage heat on a mobile device? Mm-hmm. What if you can add even more GPU cores to bring up to that what you would consider desktop class performance? So I think there's a lot of questions about what this chip will actually be. I don't think it's a dead ahead A14.
Right. Well, so they can put in just more CPU cores. They can go put in GPU cores. There's going to be, you know, but Ionic machine learning stuff, who knows what that's going to do in a Mac context. My hope is that they do something specific with the chip to handle running apps that aren't designed for ARM, right? That they specifically have some sort of really good subsystem that the chip powers to speed up apps that haven't specifically been designed for these new chips.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's an A13Z Bionic, and I said A12. You understand.
I'm kind of surprised that they're doing a MacBook Pro with the ARM. Like, I honestly thought that they would bring back MacBook.
So did I. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, and go the ARM route like that way. So I'm surprised that they're going the Pro first. They must be very confident in like the performances that these will deliver. And I think this is the test period for this. They've been on stage like a bunch over the last couple of years and touting their performance against, you know, basic Windows laptops, even against Xbox consoles on the mm-hmm. GPU side. And I think this is the real test, right? Isn't it? Like this is it's coming to life. Like. Everything's lining up.
Yeah.
So I think it's really going to put the pressure on Qualcomm.
Yeah. I mean, putting the Pro this week is a huge chest thump moment. I really hope that Apple finds a way to differentiate it from those previous chest thump moments you've talked about. They need to do more than just show a Final Cut render time, right? They need to do more than, you know, the sort of standard performance stuff that we know it's probably going to be fine at. They need to show us something where we don't think it's going to perform well or we're nervous about it performing well mm-hmm. and it just kills. That's what I want to see out of them.
Well, I mean, the first thing to show us is either they're calling it Rosetta again, but that's their on-the-fly translation layer between standard x86 apps and ARM. That's the thing I want to see. I want to see them running Lightroom or Photoshop, the x86 version, going through Rosetta and working just fine, if not better, without destroying the battery life of this new thing. Like, I think that's a first test. You know, Apple's managed a processor transition before. I think they know they have to show that to people. And then I think their second test is what can you do now in this form factor? Is it everything the same is basically the same as ever, but battery life has been doubled? Or is it, you know, it's sort of the Apple world is like, we've picked a number of hours of battery life that we think is reasonable, and that's what you get, right? I mean, that's like basically how that's how they handle the phones, right? It's like, we think you can get a day. And so we'll manage the battery. Instead of putting a huge battery in there, we'll get you a day, and then the camera sensor will be bigger or something. Like, that's the balance I'm interested in, particularly with the Air, which has medium-ish battery life right now. If they say, well, the performance is about the same, the battery life got way longer. Or if we're pretty happy with battery life, the performance is way off the charts.
Right.
Yeah. That's going to be the interesting trick, the tricky balance, right? Or even if they go, the performance is worse. Do you think they'd do that? I can't imagine so, but like.
There's no way they introduce a Pro that's slower. Like, they don't put a Pro MacBook out there unless it's way faster, full stop.
That's the thing that I was surprised to see, that it was the MacBook Pro, I think. Because I just figured that they would sort of. This would be, you know, a gradual thing. Do you think they'll have LTE?
Ooh, I don't
know.
Like,
you know, that's the benefit of ARM, right?
Yeah.
On the Windows on ARM side that's the thing.
I bet you the answer is no, and that it'll be once they fully integrated the Intel team mm-hmm. that they bought to make modems, that'll be what brings 5G to these laptops.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, I would say Apple has not been shy about shipping slow computers before. Right. That's kind of the history of this Mac line. It's like, here's an Intel part that's two generations behind. We're going to throttle it a little bit, and sometimes you're going to hear the fan. And that's what using a Mac is like. So if they can just like how fat, like these are the Apple traits that are kind of interesting to reconsider in this context. They are comfortable with a performance level. They are comfortable with a battery life. They manage those things to form factors that they think people like. as opposed to letting those things drive form factors, which many, many Windows laptop makers do. And now they've got a new part that could let them go in a lot of different directions. And if they're just like, what we're going to do, because we don't want to blow people's minds right away with a big processor shift, is basically keep things as they are to bake it out and see where the problems are and say, well, the Intel ones are still there. Mm-hmm. Or if they're going to go whole hog, say, we've made the product 5,000 times better. Battery life is doubled. Performance is doubled. It weighs a pound less. I don't know. Saying stuff. Right? Like if you just like, you could get all there and we've canceled the Intel version. Like that's, I think that's like the boldest place for them to
be. I don't think they'll go that far.
The real interesting part is going to be like how sustained the performance is. Because obviously on the Intel parts, they have like fans that the throttling can be controlled a lot better. And when what we see with the performance on like the iPhones and the iPads is that they're very good at like short bursts of performance and like really optimized tasks. So I'd love to see like how they'll build the software that way to like optimize the power of these chips in like short bursts of power, or how they've been able to just sustain that performance and really push things forward. Like if we saw like a 4K export in Premiere Pro and it like blisteringly quick compared to whatever we see on Intel or anyone else, that could be a turning point, like that sort of performance.
I just want to know if Chrome cuts the battery life in half or in a third.
I mean, that's like a big question mark, right? Like, we'll see how fast the Chrome team moves their code base to ARM and makes an ARM version.
I mean, I can tell you that the Chromium stuff on ARM is just not the only people that are really doing it is Microsoft, right? Like, Google still doesn't contribute a whole bunch to that, as far as I can see. And it's like strange that Chrome still isn't like fully optimized for Windows on ARM. Like, there's no builds. So.
Yeah, I mean. It's but like regular heavy Chrome on a Mac is a battery life destroyer, a processor hog. Put that through a translation layer onto an unproven chip in this application. It's like, will Chrome light the new MacBook Air on fire? That's like that. You know, if they did like post game press conferences after these keynotes, I'd be like, excuse me, a quick question. Is it true that the MacBook Air will light on fire if you
run Chrome for more than an hour?
So we'll see. That's happening on the 10th. We'll obviously have complete coverage of that. By the time you're listening to this, Haim Gartenberg's hands-on of the iPhone mini and Max size comparison little video will be up. I gotta say, the Max looks enormous.
Yeah.
And I say this as a big phone person with big hands. Like, that phone looks big. Go check that out. I'm very eager to see how this plays out and whether that size is as big as it seems like in this video, because it's real big. Gadget stuff. Big week of gadgets.
New DJI, don't call it a Mavic, Mini 2 drone. They still kept it at exactly the right weight to not have to deal with the FAA, which I love.
Yeah, it's funny because I bought a Mavic Mini 1 like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
I feel so dumb.
What are you doing? I could have told you. There's rumors.
Well, I was going to drive the truck through a puddle and I wanted to fly the drone over.
Oh, yeah. Well, then you need one, of course. Yeah.
You need like that Mac rumors buying guide. But for DJI. It's
like everyone is like a bad time to buy at all times. Because they're always being updated. It's fine. It's just a toy to screw around with. I don't need OcuSync or 4K. I'm going to buy the new one. Okay.
Yeah, you are.
I'm absolutely buying the new one. Yeah. Tom, thanks for joining us. Check out PS5 review, Xbox Series X, Xbox Series S reviews on the site. There are videos. Just commend everyone. Tom is obviously in London. Like, we made a video across the ocean. That's pretty cool. Check it out. And then we got an Apple event next week. So big week of gadget news going into another big week of gadget news. Excited for it. If what you came here for, some deep platform policy talk, we got a whole other mini episode of the Vergecast in the feed right now as well. Okay, you can tweet at us. I'm at Reckless. Dieter's at Backlon. Tom is at Tom Warren. And then next Tuesday, it's happening. We're launching my new podcast, Decoder.
Yeah.
It's going to be something. It's been very weird working on launching a new podcast about building things in this exact moment, let me tell you. But next Tuesday, it's coming. I'm excited about the guest. So look out for that. We'll be running some episodes in the Vergecast feed to promote it. That's it. Rock and roll.
Wear a mask.
Support for this show comes from Art Beats and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Co-Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art Beats and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art Beats and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.